So let's look at two-dimensional filtering now. All of this was in one, not all. The last bit was in 1D. Before that, we also saw some 2D. So we are going 1D and 2D and 1D and 2D. So let's go to 2D now. Let F represent the input image now to a two-dimensional filter, and let G be the corresponding filtered image. With 2D arrays converted to vectors or column matrices, we have to now change for the transforms. When we talked about the Fourier transform and the Walsh transform as WFW or AFA, we maintained the image F as a two-dimensional array, a two-dimensional matrix, n by n, with the image directly written as a matrix. Now, for convolution, we cannot do that. We have to convert the image F into a column matrix by taking the first row and writing it vertically, and then the second row and writing it vertically, and so on. Or take the first column and copy it, second column and write it again, and make a column matrix. That is required to represent filtering. So this representation of the image F is different from what we had seen earlier for the transform. So there will be a corresponding modification of the transform that comes up later too. Assume all of the images have been padded with zeros and extended to m by n arrays, and where m and n are large, so that circular convolution will give you linear convolution. That is required, because later on we will take DFT. So let's assume that, and the images may be considered to be periodic with period m by n, or you can make it square if you wish. The matrices are of size mn by 1, or if they are square, n by n, this will be n square by 1. So all the values of the image will be written one after another in a long column matrix. Periodic convolution is then written in this manner. The same summation as before, F alpha beta, but when you shift, when you reverse the impulse response and shift m minus alpha, n minus beta, you have to write mod m mod n, or modulo. So you convert these negative values that you get into positive values in the range 0 to m minus 1 or 0 to n minus 1. The result is also periodic with the same period. Now, in order to represent convolution, we have to construct another matrix of the impulse response. We want to write convolution in this manner. That is the aim. G equal to HF should represent convolution. The question is, how can we make that represent convolution? We saw that in 1D, we can construct a matrix H such that it has the values of the impulse response in the manner required, such that the matrix multiplication will give you convolution. We have to do the same thing in 2D. So it is an artificial representation of the impulse response in a certain manner to achieve the desired result. So it's not a proof that something can be... Well, in a way, later on we prove that, yes, this will give you convolution, but it is via an artificial construction. Okay? So it's not that things happen this way in nature, but you take the impulse response and put it in this manner for this operation to give us the desired result. So we need to construct the matrix H in this manner, where H0, HM, and H1, H2, so on, HM minus 1, are arranged in this manner. And this is arranged in a circulant manner because we are talking about periodic convolution. So you shift it, H0 goes out, and that H0 comes here, H1 goes out and comes back here, and HM1 minus 1 here, and so on. So this is a circulant matrix. The submatrices, let me go back, each one of these H written in bold is a matrix. And what is that matrix? It is made up of the mth row of the impulse response. The impulse response is a two-dimensional quantity because we are talking about image processing here in this example. So take the mth row of the impulse response and write it like this. And HM0, HM1, HM... You go backwards here. 1, minus 2, and so on, n minus 2, and so on, n minus 1. And then you arrange this in a circulant manner. This matrix then, capital H, this submatrix, HM, is of size, you go HM, and then the columns are going 0 to n minus 1. And then M goes 0 to M minus 1. So the matrix H is of size MN times MN. Now each submatrix HM, which has N by N, which is N by N, there are 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, N minus 1 values, and the same values are arranged in a circulant manner. So this is an N by N matrix. And there are M of those because there are M rows. So the big matrix is of size MN by MN, that one. Each little matrix here, submatrix, is N by N, and each one of them is circulant. Okay? The submatrices are circulant, and these matrices are arranged in a circulant manner. So this big matrix is called a block circulant matrix. This is not a circulant matrix itself, but it has blocks that are arranged in a circulant manner. So H is known as a block circulant matrix. I'll show an example to illustrate this representation. So that is the construction in order to make G equal to HF work as convolution in 2D. So let us consider this problem. FMN is this, some image, and I'm padding with zeros to allow for expansion. So this is a 5x5 matrix with the values 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I just wrote in a different way. It's only 3x3, a 3x3 region that has non-zero values, and I have added zeros to make it 5x5. Now let us consider the 3x3 Laplacian operator, which has minus 4, 1, 1, 1, 1, like that. And let us pad this with 0, because the impulse, this is the filter. So this is the impulse response of the filter we want to implement in this manner. And the impulse response of the filter is only 3x3, but outside that it is 0. So let us write it as a 5x5 matrix and put zeros outside. So the 3x3... This is the Laplacian operator. The 3x3 Laplacian operator is this, and arranged in a 5x5 array. The origin is here at the center, but the origin of the image FMN written in this manner in matrix order is different. The origin would be there. So we need to take into account the indexing sequence. When you write the image in this manner, m equal to 0 is there, m equal to 1, m equal to 2, 3, 4. And n equal to 1, 2, 3, 4, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So the ordering of the, or the indexing of the array is different when we talk about an image and when we have the impulse response here with the origin at the middle. So what we need to do is take this 0, 0 and put it there at the top. So just push this there and then rearrange the values. So we get 0, 0 here at the top, minus 4, and then next value 1, and after that, the value goes, the other one that was on this side will go to the other side. And then the zeros. and then what was on top here will come here. So this is just a rearrangement, just as we did for the impulse response, and this is also the impulse response in 2D, where the indexing has been adjusted so that we are looking at this portion and the other part is rearranged to fall below here. So this is now the impulse response in the adjusted or modified coordinate system with the row and column indexing starting from here. And although we are talking about matrices, because we are doing signal processing also here, we are starting with 0 there at the top, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on here, and 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Although in matrix notation, you would start with 1. So that is a minor distinction to make here. So this is the impulse response shifted and adjusted to fit into the coordinate system corresponding to the image F. Now, let me go to this example. You won't be able to read this directly, but it's in the book. All I want you to see here is the pattern. The image values are arranged in this vertical manner. This is G is on the other side, output, G equal to H, which is this big matrix, multiplied with F, that column matrix is the image. The image, F, is written with the first row, and then the second row, and then the third row, and the fourth row, and the fifth row, one after another. So let's go back. The image has the first row 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, 0, 6, 5, 4, 0, 7, 8, 9. Those values come here in the vertical order 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, 0, 0, 6, 5, 4, 0, 0, 7, 8, 9, 0, 0, 0, 0. Okay? The impulse response matrix, we have to go back again. This is the impulse response matrix with the origin shifted. To construct the matrix H, we said construct these little circulant matrices by taking one row of this at a time and arranging them circulantly, in a circulant manner rather. So let's take the first row, minus 4, 1, 0, 0, 1. Here, the first matrix is minus 4, 1, 0, 0, 1, which is the first row of the impulse response. And then rearrange that in a circulant manner within that block. So the 5 by 5 submatrix at the top left corner here is prepared by taking just this first row, minus 4, 1, 0, 0, 1, and arranged as a circulant matrix. And then take the second row, which is 1, 0, 1 with a bunch of zeros, four zeros there, and arrange that in a circulant manner. Take the third row, which is all zeros, so arranging them circulantly will give you just zero. The next one is also a bunch of zeros. And the last one was 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, and you get that in a circulant manner. Okay? So these are the five circulant matrices derived from the five rows of the impulse response with the adjusted coordinates. Now we want to create a block circulant matrix. So take each block and shift it. Take that entire block and shift it to the next position. So take all of these five blocks and push to the right. So this block goes out and comes back here in the second row. So this block with the minus 4 comes here. This block with the 1 goes here. The zeros go there, the zeros go there. And go to the end doing the same thing. So we are shifting this block one position to the right. And each block, each submatrix is pushed to the right in a circulant manner. Solution with some other operator, you will get a different matrix there. So these little submatrices, each one is circulant, and these blocks are now arranged in a circulant manner to make the big matrix. And hence, this big matrix H is a block circulant matrix. The image has been converted into a column matrix. So the image is no longer a two-dimensional array or a two-dimensional matrix, if I may call it so. But a matrix could be like that too. So the output now is given in the same manner as the input image. This matrix on the other side is the output, where you have some values. It doesn't matter what they are. There are some negative values too. The negative values arise because we are taking the gradient, Laplacian gradient. There's a difference, so there could be negative values. So to reconstitute the output as an image, you have to take the first n values and write as a row, and then the next n values as another row, and the next n values as the third row, the fourth row, the fifth row, and reconstitute the output in this manner. So GMN will be that long column matrix reorganized into a two-dimensional image in this manner. So that's the output, which is Laplacian of that image. And I have checked and these values are correct. But yeah, that's all. So that's the output. So now we have this expression. Let me go back. This expression, G equal to HF, representing two-dimensional convolution with this construction of the impulse response as a matrix. The two-dimensional impulse response image written as a matrix by choosing, by placing each row of the impulse response in this manner. So as I said, it is an artificial reconstruction that will take an image like this and make it into this matrix. A 5x5 image has been written as a 25x25 matrix. So that is an artificial construction, but so is this, where a 5x5 image has been written as a 25x1 matrix. The output is going to be a 5x5 image because this G equal to HF operation gives you circular convolution. So the output is of the same size as the input here. The input is 25x1, the output is also 25x1. But we'll take these 25 values and write them as a 5x5 matrix or 5x5 image in the output. And because we paired it with zeros, the effect of this convolution is equal to the effect of linear convolution, because our images really are only 3x3 and we added zeros. This is a 3x3 image. The impulse response is a 3x3 image paired with zeros. So the output is a 5x5 image. Okay? So what we have seen now is that the convolution operation, which is the operation involved in filtering an image with a linear shift invariant system, can be written as the multiplication of this matrix representation of an image with a block circulant matrix composed of the values of the impulse response. Now, we saw earlier that a circulant matrix is diagonalized or converted to a diagonal matrix by the DFT, the Discrete Fourier Transform. Now, there is an extension of that, which is a block circulant matrix is converted into a diagonal matrix by the two-dimensional discrete Fourier transform. The proof of this, or the construction of this, is fairly lengthy and involved. And I have given some references in the book to publications in journals where this is developed. And even those papers don't give the full development, and I don't see the point in doing all of that. So I have not prepared this in the same format as I showed the one-dimensional case. But we could construct the following: W sub m km equal to exponential j 2 pi over n km, and W n ln equal to that. This we have seen before. So these are the same as what we have seen for the 1D DFT, but for km and ln. the two indices for the input and output in the 2D case. So define this matrix W of size mn by mn, or if the image is square, this will be n square by n square. So it is the same construction. And these will contain m square partitions, each of size n by n. The partition of W for Km is this expression. Wkm is Wmkm times Wn, where Wn is what we had seen earlier, which is an n by n matrix for the other dimension. So we have the row dimension and column dimension. And we have to do a row DFT and a column DFT. Each DFT is the same, except that we do once for the row and once for the column. So you get this two-dimensional representation. This is for the row. And combining that, you for the column. Now, W inverse is also another n by m matrix with m square partition of size n by n. And here we just have the inverses. And inverse representation will come into exponential minus j 2 pi over n. So this again is the same as what we saw for the 1D case, extended 2D in parts. So that matrix Wn inverse has this, these elements, which are again simply the same thing with the indices changed. Then W, W inverse, and W inverse W will both be equal to I, the identity matrix for the dimension. So if H is block circulant, now using this construction for W, now we're using the same names W, I didn't put 2D, 3D, or 1D, and so on, but it is understood that depending upon the dimensions of H, and we are talking 1D or 2D, the constructions of these will be different. So under those conditions, then the block circulant matrix will be diagonalized into the H with these operators W and W inverse for the two-dimensional case. And DH, in a similar manner to what we have seen for the 1D case, will correspond to the Fourier transform of HMN, that is HKL, capital HKL. So those values will be arranged along the diagonal. Now HKL is a two-dimensional entity. The Fourier transform of an image is a two-dimensional array. So this will have MN, this is also M by N, but will be arranged in a different manner in an MN by MN matrix. Then we get all these two-dimensional equivalent relationships. So I didn't prove this, but I'm just showing the construction necessary to achieve this result. So all of these mean the same thing. Convolution in the image domain is G equal to HF. Convolution is equivalent to multiplication in the frequency domain. And that is given by this expression. The frequency domain filtering is given by G equal to WD, W inverse F, which is G equal to HF with H being converted to a diagonal matrix by the Fourier transform. So here W inverse F is taking the Fourier transform of image, multiply with DH is filtering. The final W is the inverse Fourier transform. That is what you do in DFT. You take the DFT of signal, you take the DFT of the impulse response, and then multiply the two DFTs, or two Fourier transform values, then take the inverse transform. Okay? So this is the same as what we saw earlier in 1D. So just a note here, the representation is slightly different. We have seen a few different representations of W and H and so on in 1D and 2D. So if an image is n by n, the DFT matrix W is n square by n square, and that is different from equation 367. Earlier I said we could write the Fourier transform of an image as capital F equal to W small f W. There, the matrices were all n by n. Here, the DFT matrix W is n square by n square. It is different, with the image now arranged as an n square by 1 column matrix. In the other expression, we wrote it simply as an n by n matrix. So we have used two different notations. I didn't change the W. Perhaps I could have put W2 or something, I didn't know that. Because we have used a subscript for W somewhere else, so it would become too messy. So in that previous expression, the matrix F was n by n, whereas here, it is n squared by 1. That's the distinction. Okay. So you just have to read the two separately, and if you put them together, you have to make sure that you note this distinction. Okay, we'll take a break in just a minute. Once you write these expressions, you could apply optimization techniques to the expressions directly. You take derivatives directly with respect to entire images. It looks a little strange, but remember again that all of these will be done element by element. It is only the mathematical representation that is so compact. In implementation and in expanded form, all of these will apply to each element one pixel at a time. So there are two derivatives that we'll be using quite often. There'll be others also, but these two are important. Given two vectors f and g and a symmetric matrix w, like what we have seen so far for convolution and transform representation, if you have f transpose g or g transpose f, it is taking the dot product of the two vectors. The derivative of that with respect to f of either product is equal to g. And this is actually done one element at a time. Derivative with respect to f1, derivative with respect to f2, f3, so on, each element. And then you recompose, note the partial derivative here, recompose the result here, and you get g. Similarly, the derivative of f transpose fw with respect to f will be 2f2wf. So these are two relationships that are important and that we will use quite often. And the optimization of filtering procedures with respect to the filter or any other parameter that you have could be done using the matrix representation of these expressions, these operations, very easily, much more easily than using the array format. It could be done in array format too, but when you have summation and interval, it becomes a little difficult to handle those operations. So all of this representation in matrix format we have been talking about is directed towards the simplification of optimization procedures for the design of optimal filters and optimal image processing techniques that we will see a little later. So that is the next step. We will apply some of these to derive the Wiener filter that you might have seen in 1D signal processing, but now we will make use of these principles. It's 11:40, let's take a 10-minute break and we'll continue in 10 minutes.